Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
38 hours ago, he was sharing his vision for Virginia in the coming year. And at this hour, Governor Bob McDonnell is with us to talk more about his final year in office. I'm A. Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us for this special edition of Virginia Conversations. Governor, thanks so much for taking time to be here this morning.
Thanks, May Lily. Good to be back on Virginia Conversations.
You know, Governor, when you gave the State of the Commonwealth address, I was watching on a separate monitor, and I have to say that what got me most was when you invited the lawmakers to join you later for crabs and oysters.
Well, we talked about how they're coming back because of a lot of work over many years to clean up the bay, and we just got a big award from the EPA with having a 2,000% reduction in nitrogen over the last several years. So our bay restoration program is working. That's great. It means jobs. It means production for the watermen. And so, yeah, we thought it would only be appropriate afterwards. We had a little reception and had those great bay oysters and crabs.
Yes, it's great to see. I had a hankering, of course, for red lobster on my own. But there were a lot of positive strides that you outlined in the State of the Commonwealth. Of all the accomplishments you're taking inventory of, what do you think will be your one final legacy?
Well, you know, I let other people worry about the legacy issues. I'm just trying to get things done. I mean, fiscal responsibility was been the hallmark, I think, of what we've tried to accomplish. And we've inherited a $6 billion budget deficit. And we made a lot of tough decisions working with the legislature, cut spending, reformed programs, reprioritized spending, and ended up with three straight budget surpluses in a row, averaging about $450 million. I think that's certainly important, but you know, more than that, we fixed the Virginia retirement system, which was going the wrong way, and we've cut about $9 billion of unfunded liabilities. Our higher education system has been dramatically reinvested in, and as a result, we've had a 4% we've had the lowest tuition increase rate in well over a decade. So we've had a lot of other positive things happening, but this year, May Lily, as you probably heard from my remarks, the big priorities for me are one is improving our K-12 system so that every young person is career or college ready. We can't make any more excuses. We're falling behind some other countries in our performance, even though Virginia schools are ranked fourth in the country. We've got to do better. And then, of course, transportation infrastructure. It affects jobs. It affects quality of life. It affects our ability to get goods to market quickly. And so we've got to do a better job there. So that'll be the two things that I will spend most of my time and effort on this year. If we get those things done, we'll have a better Virginia.
On the matter of education, one of the things you pointed out, I had no clue about until you illuminated our state against other states, is the charter schools. We have very few compared with some others.
We do. It's very disappointing. We got laws passed my first session here in the General Assembly that made it a little bit easier to get charter schools approved, but here we are 2 years later and we don't have one more charter school. You know, some states, Pennsylvania, I think, has got 150, Florida's got 500, we've got four. And this is a tool that public schools can use to provide more flexibility, more creativity, less bureaucracy, put it in places where there's underperforming or failing schools, as we have in some of the communities, and let different management companies come in from these national groups that have been successful and find ways to run these schools better. So school accountability is critically important. We're going to start rating schools A through F so parents know what kind of school their kids are going to. And those that are chronically fail 2 years or more, we're basically going to say we're going to take those schools over in an innovation opportunity school district, and we will manage them with a group that will turn these around. We cannot accept any young person going to a school that doesn't have a great teacher and doesn't have a great administration that's keeping a high bar. That's just not fair to the kids.
Okay. Well, we have a call from Frank from Richmond. Go ahead with your question to the governor.
Yes.
Good morning, Frank.
The governor's opinion was of Attorney General Cuccinelli this week saying that any Virginians who have a disagreement with a law on a religious basis should go ahead and break it, even if it means jail.
I just saw some of those comments. I you know, listen, I'm I'm focused on jobs and K-12 education and transportation. I've learned a long time ago. A lot of people say things in politics, but I can only control what I'm focused on. And right now, we have a bold agenda that I want to be able to get through, and that's what I'm focused on. I count on the Attorney General to do a good job of legal work for me, which he's doing. And other than that, I'm focusing on my job here to be able to make major reforms this year.
So it doesn't bother you that the chief law enforcement officer in the land is inviting Virginians to break the law in your name?
Well, I didn't see those comments or see it that way. So I can't tell you that I've analyzed it. It's just I can only take responsibility for what I say and I do. And what I'm saying is we're going to make schools better, we're going to make roads better, and we're going to manage our budget well. I think the Attorney General is supportive of these goals and is working with us to support that.
Thanks very much for your call, Frank.
How to change the subject. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much. And before we get off the subject of Ken Cuccinelli, I want to draw your attention to this week's Style magazine. There's a profile titled, Can Anyone Stop Ken Cuccinelli? The subtitle, He Could Stun Detractors and Become Virginia's Next Governor. Here's How. So this article might be worth checking out as well. But we're here to talk with you, Governor. So let's go to Catherine from Harrisonburg. Go ahead with your question.
Me by being able to stay until 26, and I'm worried about people who will be left in the gap if Medicaid is not expanded in our state.
So your question is around Medicaid expansion?
Yes.
Okay. Please clarify that. What is your question regarding that?
I'm asking whether or not he's going to plan on encouraging the legislature to expand Medicaid.
Okay. I know you addressed
that.
This. Yeah.
Sure. I appreciate that question. I would like to speak on that for just a minute. As everyone knows, the Obamacare legislation was upheld 5-4 by the Supreme Court. The president was reelected, and so the bill is going to be it's in effect now, but the major provisions go into effect in January of 2014. On the issue of Medicaid expansion, I agree strongly with what President Obama said in 2009, and that is, if we just put more people into a broken Medicaid system, it doesn't work. It's not responsible to increase the rolls if we have a system that doesn't work well. And that's President Obama. I agree with that. Yet, that's kind of what they're asking us to do right now. So the answer is, I do not support expanding Medicaid unless we have significant reforms. And here's why. I don't think I cannot in good conscience recommend a multi-billion dollar increase in the expenses shouldered by Virginians when we have virtually no flexibility at the local level to be able to control our costs, to be innovative, to use user fees and technology and copays and different things to actually control the program. It's just that's not good overall for our citizens. Medicaid has grown about 1,600%. 1,600%. It's a huge increase over the last 30 years. It's gone from 5% to 21% of the total Virginia budget. And when we have a number of other fiscal constraints, May Lilly, and what I'm dealing with, especially with this dysfunction in Washington where they run us into the ground every couple of months because they can't get things done, they can't pass budgets, they can't agree on how to run the great country of the United States in a fiscally responsible way, I have got to be very prudent in the way we run our state. So it doesn't make economic sense. At the same time, I've tasked Dr. Hazel, Secretary of Health, to implement additional ways to improve access to health care, to reduce costs, to be more innovative, to find ways to promote consumer-driven health care. So that's our position on that. I want people to have access to good health care, but we can't do it in a way that's overall irresponsible for the citizens when it comes to our budget.
Catherine, thank you for your call. Kasha from Fairfax, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Governor, sir.
Hi,
I'm a current college freshman, and my question for you is, what are you doing in Virginia to ensure that college tuition is decreasing and not increasing?
Kasha, that is a great question. That's something I ran on for governor, and over the last 3 years, let me tell you what we've done. First, we passed the Top Jobs 21st Century legislation 2 years ago, which was a blueprint for dramatic reform and reinvestment in our colleges and universities. So I've got all five of my kids have attended a Virginia university. Three have graduated, two are still to go. And this is vitally important for the access to the American dream. So our goal that we put in the code is more slots, 100,000 more degrees over the next 15 years, focus on STEM, focus on degree completion, focus on financial aid. At my request, I've put in the budget $350 million of new money for higher education. This year I'm suggesting another 31 plus bumping up the TAG grants from $2,800 to $3,100 to help kids go into a private Virginia universities. And I have been very firm with our board members and our presidents and said we have got to arrest this trend of rising tuitions. They've grown 10% a year. That's unacceptable. Young people have so much debt now when they get out of school. It is a tremendous burden. It's got to end. So as a result of all that, we had the lowest tuition increase in over a decade this year. It was 4%. That's after 10 years averaging over 9%. So we've got it on the run, but I've asked the presidents this year to keep tuition increases to the rate of inflation, CPI, which currently is, I think, hovering around 2%. So it is a top priority, Kasia. I cannot have young people like you, freshmen in high school, looking at tuition increases of 8, 9, 10, 15%. It's not acceptable, and I think we've made the right policy changes and have made the right requests for restructuring and reform at our universities, so those rates are going to be, you're going to see lower rates by far in the future.
Thanks, Kasia, and good luck to you in school. Governor, we conducted a focus not too long ago on tuition costs and affordability of colleges. One of the detractors said, look, if an individual university would approach its finances, its business in a different way, rather than thinking of it as a business and more of as a nonprofit, that there might be more favorable tuitions for students. In other words, that each university has its own role and responsibility. What do you think of that?
Well, that's an interesting approach. I think these kind of ideas are certainly worth discussing. When you look nationally at the trends that I outlined in Virginia, May Lilly, are the same trends nationally with tuition and board and room and fees at some of these universities now being over $50,000. You can buy a couple of cars, for that. That's a year. And so to have $250,000 college education, some for the average middle class family, it's just staggering and almost unattainable. And so we have got to get this problem under control. And I told you what I've done. One of the other things that's in the bills that we passed the last 2 years was to increase efficiency of our universities. We've actually got goals in the bill that we passed to reallocate money from overhead directly into the targeted goals of middle-class financial aid, degree completion, year-round use of facilities, more degrees, especially in STEM disciplines, so that we're finding that our universities continue to get more efficient and productive, meaning that their operating costs go down. And so that to me, because then they don't have to charge as much for the cost of the service. So that's some of the things that we're doing. I think Virginia is a national leader in this, but looking at these kinds of nonprofit or other models, anything that we can do to make our universities less expensive, I think, is great. We just cannot afford young people to be graduating with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in debt, and then take 10, 15 years to pay it off. It really hurts them when they start their career.
Here's a topic that's on the minds of many Virginians. And Peggy, you're from Virginia Beach. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Hello, Governor McDonald.
Hi, Peggy.
Thank you. My question is a two-part question. Every legislator in the area around the potential site of Coles Hill, as well as Lieutenant Bill Bowling, are against lifting the ban on uranium mining.
Right.
Where are you on this, and why would General Assembly legislators want to go against the will of those who live in the area and who oppose lifting the ban?
Well, thank you. I know that's going to be a topic of some discussion. I got involved last year. The legislature asked us to do a second part of a detailed study to determine whether or not we had a regulatory structure that we could ensure that mining and milling of uranium would be safe in the Virginia climate. We spent the last year producing that study. The last part of it, that is actually due out on Tuesday, on the socioeconomic impact, which is some of the things you just mentioned in your comments. And so I am been reading all of these detailed studies and a public comment. I've met with proponents and opponents. I'll read the last study that comes out on Tuesday, and then perhaps at that point be ready to make a decision about what I think. I think it's premature for some, without all the benefit of all these scientific reports, to come to a conclusion. But here's the bottom line. One, I think Virginia should be the energy capital of the East Coast. We ought to use all of our God-given natural resources to produce energy, because it's important to have low-cost electricity for homes and for businesses to be able to do well here in Virginia, as opposed to buying oil from Russia or Venezuela. If we can produce nuclear power here in Virginia more cheaply, we ought to do it. But the other point is, the only way that I would support uranium mining is this, is we have to be able to demonstrate that it would be safe at a very high probability, and that the regulations that the administration could produce would ensure people that we would have every reasonable precaution to keep it safe. If we can do that, then I say we ought to mine uranium. If we can ensure public safety and environmental safety, then we shouldn't do it. So that's the test. And I am still reading the multiple documents and the public comment to arrive at my own conclusion. Some have already arrived at their decision, some haven't, but to me that's the right thing to do. We shouldn't be afraid to use energy. Mining is an inherently dangerous activity, whether it's coal or other things. Uranium is the most dangerous, probably, of those minerals. But I think we ought to do what's best interests of our energy industry, but also in keeping people safe.
Thank you so much, Peggy. And we have a couple minutes left. So Whitney from Arlington, go ahead with your question. Let's see if we can handle it before our break.
Hi there. I was wondering we can plan on seeing in terms of job creation in the 2013 General Assembly session.
Whitney, great question, because there is no more important challenge for me than the ongoing effort to get our people back to work. We made a lot of progress. We're down from a 7.3% unemployment rate when I became governor to now 5.6%. We're the second lowest east of the Mississippi, so Virginia has done relatively well, but I'm not satisfied. We have over 200,000 people still that are not employed. We've got to do much better. Over the last couple of years, we've gotten about $120 million of new money for everything from new programs, from tax credits and foreign trade offices and any number of things, grants to be able to attract business here. We've been very successful getting companies to relocate here. This year, we're retooling some of those. We're providing some new incentives. We've got a big workforce development and training initiative that we're proposing into the General Assembly, because companies ask me that first and foremost. What are you going to do to provide good people to be able to work at my company in the long term if I come to Virginia?
We're going to pick up with that conversation shortly. We're going to take a minute break, and we'll be right back with more of Governor Bob McDonnell on Virginia Conversations. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today we're pleased to have with us the Governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell. Governor, one topic I'm wondering about 1 year later is abortion restrictions. Your administration supported abortion restrictions that originally included transvaginal ultrasound. There was a backlash, the feeling among many that the legislation might have gone too far. Is this one of those things you look back on and think you might have done differently?
Well, the bill was was completely, mischaracterized. To be honest, it was really a bill about informed consent, and the purpose of the bill was just to be sure that when ultrasounds were performed, that the woman had a chance to be able to see the ultrasound. That was the purpose, and that's why. Why I supported it. It didn't specify at all in the language of the bill what kind of ultrasound. All that was left up to the doctor. So all I would say is that the bill is passed. I'm a pro-life governor. I believe in the sanctity of human life. I think that, there's others that don't, and we have a respectful difference in our community and in our society about that issue. All I can say is the focus of every session that I've had overwhelmingly has been jobs and kitchen table issues. It's been education, it's been transportation, it's been pension system reform, getting people back to work. And that's the focus again this session. As you heard from my State of the Commonwealth speech, overwhelmingly our focus was on these issues. We did have an interesting initiative, though, by the way, you saw, is dealing with adoption for foster care kids. As a pro-life person, I think that is something we really need to focus on more, getting some more of these young folks in permanent loving homes. And so we announced a major initiative to help in that area. And I think you're going to see the focus this year, at least certainly with my agenda, I think most legislators, is on getting people back to work, fixing our roads, fixing our schools, and that's what we should be doing.
And another of the projects that you unveiled is your desire to eliminate the gas tax in Virginia. In fact, Bo from Hanover, you have a comment about that. Good morning, Bo.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to say thank you, Governor, for continuing to push for transportation funding. It's much needed. I wanted to speak specifically about the gas tax. You talked about removing the gas tax completely, and I see some problems with that. Number one, you're going to incentivize driving, which is going to increase congestion, it's going to increase accidents, and it's going to increase pollution. Some of the other side effects is going to be a loss of out-of-state tax income. Approximately 30% of the gas tax is paid by out-of-state travelers. And I just don't see where gas stations, there will be a drop in gas costs if your policy takes effect. But I don't see it being I don't see it being the full amount. And I just don't see it staying as a long-term solution at the gas pumps. I think eventually that cost is going to go to somebody else. We'll just increase it after a short little drop. And I'm curious, why not increase the sales tax by some lesser percent instead of up to 5.8 while still retaining the current gas tax? And on a separate note real quick, I just want to say I agree with the extra cost for high-efficiency vehicles to compensate for their lack of paying for the use of the roads. The increase in funding for transportation is specifically for the high efficiencies of using rail. And I would also like to see some additional public transportation, more so for busing of areas around city areas. For example, Richmond has a really good bus system. It doesn't help out Hanover so much as it does Chesterfield County. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, appreciate your call. So about the gas tax.
Yeah, he's obviously thought about this a lot. I disagree with some of the economic analysis that he's made. Let me just say a couple of quick things because transportation is critically important for quality of life, for jobs, mobility, particularly Hampton Roads, Northern Virginia. One, the gas tax is a long-term declining revenue source. It's eaten up by inflation, by dramatically increased fuel efficiency through the CAFE standards and alternative fuel vehicles. And over the long run, we're not going to be able to rely on the gas tax that much because it's going to have to be increased regularly because of the decline in volume. So I thought let's be leaders now. Let's transfer to a sales tax. We already have 0.5% of the sales tax already goes to transportation, so it's a known quantity, and it grows with economic activity, 3-5% or more a year. The numbers about in-state, out-of-state are not accurate. It's actually closer. I do think market forces, as we've seen in other states, when you eliminate that tax, the market forces will drive the price of gas down, will be one of the lowest gas prices in the country. People will stop here more. They'll pay more when they go in and buy their candy bars and coffee when they stop. And that means more sales tax revenue. I think it does make sense. It'll generate overall this program about $845 million a year with that conversion, plus the fees, plus the use of general fund, and we'll solve the problem of construction being depleted by maintenance needs, and that's the goal.
Okay. Mike from Portsmouth, you own a Prius, so you're the perfect candidate to get on this conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I live in Portsmouth, and I work in Norfolk, and I drive a Prius. So with the Midtown-Downtown tolls and now the $100 additional tax on my car, you're starting to cost me, Governor. But really my question is this. If you're going to – the argument is that the $100 tax is to make up for the fact that we don't pay much in the gas tax anyway, but you're talking about doing away with the gas tax. So what's the point of charging the $100?
Well, because and that's a good question, and I appreciate it. It's because you're not paying any federal gas tax. Mike, the way that our roads are funded are state gas tax, federal gas tax, state sales tax. That's overwhelmingly how we pay. So while you're correct, we would be getting rid of the state sales tax, you also don't pay any of the federal gas tax, which comes back from the federal government to pay for 25-30% of our roads. You're not paying anything for that. And listen, I encourage alternative fuel vehicles. Mike, I just ordered the transformation of all of our state fleet to natural gas because it's cleaner. It'll save us money because of the cost of natural gas. So I think that's a good thing. But everybody should pay their share. Priuses use roads as much as a gas guzzling SUV. You know, you drive the same road miles, and so I just want to make sure that we have a way of paying for our roads. Imagine if we had all of our cars transitioning to natural gas or electricity, and not paying any state or federal gas tax, then nobody would be paying for the roads. So that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, this is a trend that we should encourage. But we have to realize that the lost revenue by not paying a federal gas tax means that we're going to get dramatically less money. So that's the reason.
I think this is a very, very pertinent topic now. So many Virginians are about gun rights and want to keep their guns, but so many people are responding. Says Sandy Hook. Howard from Charlottesville, you have a comment around that for the governor.
Well, yes, sir. I know that you, early in your administration, implemented a gun safety in schools program. I'm proud of you for that. Thankful. Wanted to compliment you. And I was wondering how you stand on this. I know that on gun control, I know that when Sandy Hook first happened, you had remarked that had an instructor had a firearm, that this could have stopped a whole lot sooner. And I agree with that. I am a NRA member, long-term gun appreciator and enthusiast, and a graduate of UVA, and I know when I graduated there in 95, I was quite a bit older. I graduated at 45. That we never thought about that. But going back to school now, I would have some problem sitting in a classroom knowing that I am in a gun-free zone. So I'd appreciate your comments. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Well, every young person, and I have five children of my own that are going to Virginia public schools and colleges, and boy, we owe a duty here in government to be sure that we provide the safest possible environment in our K-12 and our higher ed system. I worked with Governor Kane after Virginia Tech, and we came out with a series of reforms primarily aiming at school safety and mental health. And I think this is a trend of in our society. We have got to just make sure people are more responsible in dealing with mental health problems better. So I've issued an executive order immediately after Sandy Hook. I appointed the members this week to have a comprehensive look at our school safety programs, at mental health, at our criminal justice database reporting systems, and so forth. We'll have recommendations in the next 3 weeks. We want to do things that work, that actually will help to stop and prevent, not just to make people feel good about doing something, but policies that work. I think that's key to modern good governance, and we will have a series of recommendations in a couple weeks about school safety and college campus safety.
Sirrah from Annandale, you're a mother of two. What's your question for the governor?
Hi, Governor. My name's
Hi, Sirrah.
I'm calling because I have two children. One's going into public. One is in the Virginia public schools, and one will be going there. And I know in your Commonwealth address, you focus a lot on education.
Yes.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on your K-12 education plan?
Sure, and I appreciate the call on that. I can't think of anything better that we can do to provide better access to the American dream and a better foundation for the future than making sure that every young person is career or college ready, that everybody has a world-class teacher, and that everybody goes to a high-performing school. That's what we need to do. So I've outlined a series of things that help recruit and retain the best teachers, giving teachers a 2% pay raise, making sure that we have good performance review system to make sure the good ones advance and the poor ones do not. Ranking our schools so we have better accountability, A through F, being able to have more charter schools and virtual schools, college laboratory schools, and other things to provide good alternatives, bringing in the Teach for America program so that we don't have in Virginia to retain and recruit the best kids at the best universities to come into teaching and keep them there. That's what Finland and other places do, and that's why they've got world-class international schools. All these things, I think, will be helpful, but it comes down to accountability. We've got some schools that are not up to par and are underperforming, and my policy is zero tolerance for failing schools. If they are below standard and get an F grade for a couple of years, we're going to have a way of having them replaced by state-managed schools. We just cannot tolerate school systems that don't don't provide a good opportunity for our kids.
Thanks for your call. John from Williamsburg, you had a question about the ABC stores.
Yes, good morning.
Governor,
it's a pleasure and an honor to speak with
you.
I had a quick question about the funding of transportation, and I was wondering how many liquor stores have we sold recently to provide funding for transportation? And I guess my suggestion is, why don't we sell some liquor stores and provide some funding for transportation as was promised in the original election?
You know, I, John, it's a great question. The answer directly is none. I tried a couple of years ago to privatize our ABC stores like 32 other states are doing, like many other states are considering. I thought we outlined a detailed plan for how that would bring in more revenue, and I had planned that all that revenue would be used for transportation. Unfortunately, the General Assembly shot it down by a lot of pressure from special interests who have a monopoly over the distribution of beer and wine right now, and it's really disappointing. It's going to happen eventually. That's what's happening. It's the free market should go ahead and control beer and wine just like they do. I mean, excuse me, like distilled spirits just like they do. It's like they do everything else. And so I don't think it's going to happen soon, but it will happen. It's just the way the market needs to work. So we're looking at a series of other things. The transportation plan that I've introduced will generate about $845 million a year from a conversion to the sales tax, from fees, and from the use of general fund. It's a prudent plan, and that's what we're relying on to pass this session.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your efforts. I realize that that's a tough question, and that that's a hard thing to do. So I, you know, keep up the good work. And
thank you.
If you can sell some liquor stores, that might
thank
help.
Thank you. I appreciate
your call. Yes, have a good morning. You know, on the issue of prisons and prisoner rights, you received a standing ovation on Wednesday when you talked about restoring the rights of felons. Can you go a little into what your thought was with this proposal?
Well, sure, May Lily. Listen, I believe we're a nation of second chances. I believe in justice. I believe that when people are finished paying their debt to society, that we ought to do everything we can to make them good and productive citizens and get them reintegrated into society. I mean, we want more good citizens, not more prisoners, not more people coming back to prison. And so I said when I ran during the campaign that I believed we ought to create the fairest and fastest restoration of rights system in history. And that's what we've done. I just this week passed Governor Kane, and I've restored more rights than anybody in history. But we still have so many people who don't apply, don't know about the system. And I just think it's a matter of it's just smart government. And so what I recommended is even though I'm restoring rights, that we just ought to have an automatic restoration process. This is what most of the states in America do. When you hit certain hurdles, you've finished your prison sentence, you've waited maybe a period of time, you've paid your fines and costs and restitution, then you should automatically get your rights back. And that's what I proposed 2 days ago, and it was warmly received by some and strongly opposed by others. But I understand that, but I just think it's the right thing to do as a matter of justice and second chances. And let's get people back and be good citizens, not keep them down so they can't participate in society.
Here's another topic that I know is dear to your heart, and that is support of mental health services in Virginia. And for that reason, I'm glad that Wayne from Hampton has this question. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, Governor.
Hi, Wayne.
Y'all have a new policy in which the Community Services Board actually does the screening so far as other agencies or themselves being able to continue services to those, especially in the intensive in-home program, as well as other services. It's the fox guarding the hen house, because my experience is that they are providing and continuing to recommend their own services as opposed to services that other agencies may offer.
Okay, do you want to go ahead and take that? We don't have much time left, Governor, so do you want to just...
Well, that's something I'm honestly not familiar with. Obviously, we try to have our checks and balances and controls so that we have appropriate oversight in all agencies. I'm not aware of that specific dynamic. It's something we can certainly look into.
But as far as your overarching policies around mental health, you highlighted some of those this week.
Well, yeah, a couple things. One is we resolved the issue with the Justice Department, and we're going to be transitioning over the next couple of years people that have physical disabilities from the training centers back into the community. something I believed in for a long time. Community-based care, closest to the people, less expensive for the taxpayer. We're going to continue that trend. Secondly, I put a lot of money into the budget this year, either in advance before Sandy Hook, to be able to provide more crisis intervention for adults and more child mental health services. Unfortunately, we've had more of these cases out in the community, and the better we can address these earlier, there's less problems that will occur later, even with aberrant behavior or helping to allow people to have a good quality of life. So we have a pretty good package of initiatives in the budget this year.
Governor, we only have 90 seconds left with you, and we've spoken about the future of the Commonwealth. Will you share with us what your future plans are? What are your personal plans after?
I'll tell you when I figure them out. You know, I've got a year left, May Lily, and I learned as a young lieutenant in the Army, don't take your eyes off the hill in front of you, you know, and you'll never get to the hill behind it. So I am laser focused right now on transportation, on workforce development, on K-12 reform, on having a fiscally prudent budget. I've got 45 days to work with these legislators. And, you know, I worry about it later. I've been in office 22 years. I've enjoyed it very much. I was in the military before that, a prosecutor before that. I love helping people and serving people. And I'll figure it out sometime later on this year. But right now, it's focused on the General Assembly.
Well, as always, we appreciate your time this morning, and it's always a pleasure talking with you, Governor. Thank you for sharing your insight, and thank you for your candid responses to our callers.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for giving me this forum, and you got great callers, and I appreciate people being involved in democracy. It's very important.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We're talking with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell just a moment ago, but now joining us is Richmond Times-Dispatch political reporter and columnist Jeff Shapiro. Thanks for dropping by, Jeff.
Thank you, May Lily. Good morning.
Jeff, at the beginning of the show, one of the first callers wasn't even calling about the governor. He was calling about Cuccinelli. It's so interesting that there is this relationship going on where sometimes the governor finds himself talking on behalf of Ken Cuccinelli.
Yes, the attorney general's reputation precedes him. And from the earliest days of Governor McDonnell's administration, Ken Cuccinelli has sort of set the pace. You'll remember one of the very first issues the governor attempted to address is whether he would renew an executive order providing anti-discrimination protections for gay public employees. And it was clear that the governor didn't want to offend his conservative friends and was trying to figure out some way around this, other than sure, perhaps promising to be on his best behavior. But then the attorney general really forced his hand by dusting off an opinion that the governor had written as attorney general, that said the governor, generically speaking, had no authority to provide such protections, at least by executive order. And this has pretty much been the pattern over the McDonald years.
Our listeners are also interested in this proposal to eliminate the gas tax. So if we have that, could we play the soundbite from the governor relating to the gas tax elimination? Let's hear it. If we don't hear it, that's okay.
The plan I've suggested will also eliminate Virginia's 17.5 cents per gallon tax on gasoline and replace it with a 0.08% increase in the sales and use tax that will not tax gasoline. Now, we'll be the first state in the nation to eliminate the gas tax, which is projected to be in a long-term state of decline. We've been first in a lot of things. This shouldn't bother you.
Okay, Ricky from Virginia Beach, go ahead with your question or comment about this.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I've been following the transportation bill since the referendum popped up, and it always amazed me, partially, the disingenuous portrayal of it. The gas tax back then was projected as hundreds of millions of dollars in tax increases over 5 years, and in reality is, that was 2 cents at the time, was $9 and some odd change based on 25 miles to the gallon, 12,000 miles a year, the average consumer. Yet if some trade, like I say, is hundreds of millions of dollars in the paper. The paper prior to that said about VDOT having cost overruns and sloppy bid procedures, yada, yada, yada. And naturally, when the referendum came up, the people resoundingly said no. Up pops the public-private partnerships, and the toll is just projected in the papers and by journalists as being just $2.50, just $2.50, as opposed to those hundreds of millions of dollars in tax increases. Yet when you look at the toll at just $2.50 twice a day times 260 work days, is $1,300 a year. And they say we can't raise taxes during these hard economic times. Well, which is more cost prohibitive, $50 in tax increase or $1,300 in tolls?
Okay.
And it still leaves the change short. What should be done is a 10-cent gas increase would be $50. $100 a plate, which would raise $150 to the average consumer who's now paying $88 a year in fuel taxes, would raise greater than $1.2 billion a year, which would pay for every single project that's on the board in Virginia in under 20 years. With the tolling private method, we get one project paid for with $1,300 a year for 70 years. And I would like to know from a journalist why this is portrayed to so, apples to horses rather than annual true cost.
Right. Okay.
And user fee type thing.
Ricky, thank you so much for your comment. Go ahead.
The problems facing the transportation program in this state are a volume problem, and the solutions would logically seem to be volume-based. That's one thing that the governor's proposal really seems to avoid, getting rid of the fuel tax, increasing the sales tax, but again, not applying it to purchases of gasoline or diesel. Actually, the cents per gallon tax on diesel fuel would be preserved. That's got the truckers up in arms. I think if one looks at the governor's proposal, there is arguably some gimmickry in that. That is not an indictment. It is only to point out that the governor is trying again a third time to come up with something that looks and smells like a fix for transportation. However, he is sharply limited. The Republican Party is sharply limited by the hostile position it has taken on taxation. The issue of raising the fuel tax, which one suspects would be barely noticeable to motorists, is something that would generate a good deal of money. There would be a spike initially, depending on the increase. But in time, as the governor correctly points out, it would continue to fade. What Virginia needs to do is come up with an entirely different volume-based fix for transportation. Would that be a mileage tax, for example? This is something that is being considered. It's actually in place to some degree in Oregon. The Netherlands has done this. It does require some big brotherism, if you will, requiring a certain amount of electronic technology installed in one's cars. But there are some trade-offs in it. It can be cheaper to run your car on the road if you are operating it off-peak. One would pay a premium if one had one's vehicle in motion during those heavy commuting hours. So perhaps that's the solution. One of the problems with the governor's proposal is that the out-of-staters, the folks who are passing through Virginia, wouldn't contribute a dime unless they perhaps stopped and purchased a bottle of shampoo because some of the proceeds from that would roll over to transportation.
The number is 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611, or, like a $5 candy bar when you go through a convenience store.
Presumably an imported chocolate bar.
Right. 866-611-6397, another topic that came up with the governor that listeners were interested in is uranium mining. And I understand that Gene from Clarksville, you have a comment around that. Hi, Gene. Are you still there? No, you're gone. Let's talk about uranium mining, Jeff. That's That's an issue that someone from Virginia Beach brought up, and a lot of people who don't understand uranium might, oh, that's just a South Side issue. No, it affects everybody now who is in the path or the perceived path of runoff. So you do have callers, such as we did this morning, from Virginia Beach. But you have many supporters who say, please bring us economic stimulation. We need it, and this is going to deliver it to us in Southside.
There is the argument that this will be a source of hundreds of jobs. However, of course, the mine would only operate for a certain number of years. One wonders if there were a mine, given the cycles of the uranium market, would there be long periods of dormancy, inactivity, if you will, at that mine, again, assuming there is one. And, of course, whether a mine is operating or not, there is still, of course, this issue of storage of wastes, so-called radioactive tailings. That's what has folks in Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, Suffolk, Norfolk, et cetera, upset and nervous. That toxic runoff into the Bannister River, which feeds Lake Gaston, from which Southampton Roads draws a good deal of its water, would somehow be imperiled.
Help me understand the Medicaid issue that we touched on. I see it from both sides. On the one hand, the governor is saying, why should we be strapped with funding something that has been handed to us by the federal government? We're trying to save money. We don't want to spend more money on something that's been mandated by someone else. The Democratic rebuttal to that is, let's help Virginians with their Medicaid. Can you help delineate what's going on here?
One of the points that is barely made, particularly by the McDonald administration and the conservative Republicans in the legislature, and surprisingly is barely made by the Democrats who would argue for greater spending, is just how parsimonious Virginia is when it comes to supporting its Medicaid program. It is in the lower 40 states, 40, if you will, but 40-something, excuse me. And it's surprisingly cheap, if you will, given how wealthy this state is. The problem, of course, is that this is a growing bill. It is the fastest growing bill in state government. And if you are a governor who is looking to take more money out of the fund that helps support things like health care, and you're worried about transportation, you probably don't want to reach too deeply into your pocket to spend even more on health care, particularly for those less fortunate than ourselves.
Gene from Lynchburg, go ahead with your question or comment for Jeff Shapiro.
Hi. My question is, if we're going to remove this gasoline tax, it seems senseless to me not to include fuel in the sales tax. That, in my mind, removes people from out of state from paying anything for the use of our highways.
This gas tax elimination is hotter than I thought this morning.
The point regarding the sales tax, which is a percentage-based tax, if there were a percentage-based tax applied to fuel, it could be very lucrative. In fact, it would be much more responsive to the kind of the cycles of the economy than a cents per gallon tax. There was an effort back in the 80s to apply a percentage-based tax to purchases of fuel. It was advanced by a Republican governor at the time, John Dalton. The legislature was then firmly controlled by the Democrats, and the Democrats were insistent that Virginia stick with a cents per gallon fuel tax, that was visible, it was noticeable, it was obvious, it was something you saw at the pump. And so depending on who is in charge, Democrat or Republican, there's been a good deal of resistance over the years to really kind of move Virginia's highway financing program forward. There was that significant exception in 1986 when, under Democrat Jerry Blyles, the Virginia legislature made its last significant investment in road and rail.
John from Lynchburg, I know you want to dovetail this discussion. Go ahead.
Yes, I would like to make a comment for the speaker as well. I completely agree with having a user tax on gasoline. Instead of making it so much a percentage, make it a flat quarter. Right now we're at, 17 cents a gallon?
17.5 cents a gallon.
Per gallon. It doesn't matter if you're in-state or out-of-state. You get a comprehensive amount of money, revenue per year, from everyone that uses what we do. It just seems like that would make a whole lot more sense instead of just trying to run certain toll roads or that people will just avoid if they can help it, or just trying to absolve it altogether.
Okay.
Thank you.
Gosh, thanks for your input on that. And as well, Sam from Roanoke, you have a couple of comments to add.
I'm in the environmental field, and a percentage of the gas tax goes towards a fund that pays for a lot of the cleanup stuff that we do. And with that gas tax being eliminated, that fund would in turn be eliminated. And I'm wondering what that would do and how the funding of petroleum cleanup would, you know, take place and, you know, the future of my job.
Well, you're an environmental scientist?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So this is not only about your use of vehicles, but about your field as well.
Yeah, my actual career.
Okay. I'm not sure that's a question. Jeff, would you want to take that? Because it seems more rhetorical for your purposes.
Well, transportation requires building materials. Building materials are handled by construction workers, so there is a good deal of economic activity developed, generated by road construction. The governor occasionally makes that point. In fact, in one of the earlier versions of his transportation program, he all but described it as an economic stimulus plan. How, you know, Barack Obama-like of him. Concern about employment, I think, is legitimate, because one of the things that the governor's plan would do is only generate enough money to cover the current shortfall on maintenance obligations. Under Virginia law, the first obligation of the Department of Transportation is to maintain existing roads, not build new ones, maintain existing roads. And that bill is climbing, and the McDonnell Initiative would only generate enough to cover that shortfall. There would be little or no money for new roads. There are many moving parts to this program, and critics would say not a lot of yield. Remember, however, this is an election year. Bob McDonnell's successor will be selected, and he would like to see a Republican elected, of course. House of Delegates is on the line, not that its control is in doubt, but the Republicans don't want to see their substantial majority reduced.
John from Charlottesville, go ahead with your comment.
I'm going to go back to this gas tax thing. I'm a little concerned about the governor's proposal from the standpoint of many of us in Virginia have purchased very fuel-efficient diesel cars. These cars are cleaner than gas engines. They are more efficient than most gas engines. And the governor is going to continue to tax diesel and therefore taxing these fuel-efficient vehicles. I'm wondering whether or not he could consider allowing us to use off-road diesel and or allow exempt the service stations that provide diesel for cars, because big rigs can't get into them anyway. I think it's very unfair. They're trying very hard to get us to use efficient, clean burning engines, and these engines are cleaner than gasoline engines, we're going to be penalized for doing so.
Right. John, we do appreciate your input on that. Absolutely. Jeff, in our final seconds, your thoughts?
Fairness or lack thereof in this legislation will be a big talking point for both sides.
Yes, and we really appreciate all of your input this morning. Callers really seem to be interested in the gas tax elimination, and we're really appreciative of that dialogue. That is all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, Governor Bob McDonnell and Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And, of course, thank you for listening. I'm May Lily Lee. We'll see you next time.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.